This is Heather Dubrow's World. Here's Heather.
Please welcome Dr. Lee.
Hello there.
How are you?
I am well. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you here. It's so funny. So Terry, of course, you and Terry are acquainted and work together in the surgery center. And Terry was telling me about this insane new procedure that you're doing. And I thought, gosh, this is something our audience would really want to hear about. But let's just start from the beginning. Tell everyone what kind of doctor you are and what your specialty is.
Well, I'm a minimally invasive gynecologist, and I specialize in the treatment of common tumors called uterine fibroids.
Right. So in the past, because I know I don't have fibroids, but my sister did, and I remember there was like a lot of, you know, surgeries, and people would try to wait, and it was very, very invasive, right? And that, I mean, obviously, surgery. Did you ever have fibroids?
No.
Do you have friends that ever have fibroids?
I think I have one friend that did, that had to get them removed.
Yeah, and it's like a big deal, especially if they're like close to your ovaries and whatnot. So tell me all about fibroids.
So fibroids are the most common tumors that women have in the reproductive years. By age 50, almost 70% of Caucasian women and over 80% of African American women have fibroids.
Really?
And about 40% of those women have symptoms because of those fibroids.
What kind of symptoms?
Pressure on their bladder, for example, causing urinary frequency, abdominal distension, looking pregnant, very painful menstrual cycles, very heavy menstrual bleeding, and it can even cause miscarriages and infertility. So fibroids are a big problem. It's underestimated how many women truly have fibroids, but by most recent calculations, there are over 12 million U.S. women who are symptomatic for uterine fibroids at this moment.
Wow.
And very few end up ever getting them treated because they basically don't like the options that are given to them.
Well, do you have to have them treated? I mean, if you're not, if you're sort of asymptomatic and you have fibroids, is it better just to leave them alone?
Well, it's simplistically, yes, because you never want to do anything unless you have to do something. So if you're not having symptoms, it's easy to say, no, don't do anything. However, you could be painting yourself into a corner by waiting too long, and then you have no other options but a major surgery such as a hysterectomy. And hysterectomy is the most common treatment for uterine fibroids, and uterine fibroids are the most common cause for a woman to have a hysterectomy.
Now, I remember because we did fertility, that it was it fibroids that can grow under those circumstances?
Fibroids grow until the hormones no longer exist, so they grow until menopause.
Okay, so obviously if you're doing fertility, they can grow even more. Because I kind of remember either my sister or someone having to have their fibroids removed before they could do fertility treatments. Would that seem reasonable?
Yes, because uterine fibroids can cause miscarriage, and so you don't want to transfer embryos and then have them lost because of the uterine fibroids, or get pregnant and then lose the pregnancy in the second trimester well before the baby's even viable. Fibroids can also cause postpartum hemorrhage, whereby after the delivery of the baby, there's extreme life-threatening bleeding. They can grow during pregnancy and degenerate, causing chronic pain. And then we're stuck because you can't really treat that pain very easily during a pregnancy.
Right.
So uterine fibroids conservatively cost this country $34 billion annually. That's breast cancer, colon cancer, and ovarian cancer put together.
All from fibroids.
All from uterine fibroids. And yet there's hardly any research being done on uterine fibroids.
How are they detected? Just through a regular gynecological exam?
Yes. Most of the time, the patient may present with symptoms or not and have a routine annual pelvic exam, in which case the uterus palpates larger than it should be. And if so, then the gynecologist would refer that patient to have an ultrasound examination, and then they can be visualized.
Wow. All right. So what are you doing about it, Dr. Lee?
Well, I developed a new procedure for uterine fibroids, and I've been doing that procedure for a little over 20 years now. And it is now approved in the U.S. It's FDA cleared. It's cleared in Canada, Europe, U.K., and in Central America and in Mexico. And so this new procedure allows women to preserve the uterus and not have to have a major surgery like a hysterectomy. It's an outpatient therapy where they have the procedure, then go home the same day, and within 3 to 5 days, they're back at work. It's also cosmetic. There are only a couple incisions. One is 5 millimeters and one is 10 millimeters, so they're quite cosmetic and small. And we can usually hide one in the belly button. And what we basically do is destroy the uterine fibroids with heat. It's simple temperature. By placing a small needle within the fibroid, we can heat the fibroid and we can control where that heat goes and how high it goes. So therefore, we can destroy just the fibroids themselves and leave the surrounding muscle and uterine lining intact.
So you're melting them, basically.
Basically so. And then we don't have to remove them. We just allow the body to reabsorb them. We're basically just reducing the fibroids, which are tumors, down into broken down protein. And then we allow the uterus to reabsorb that broken down protein like it normally does anyway. It just recycles it.
Wow, that's incredible.
So fascinating.
So are there a usual place where fibroids live? I mean, do they live on the ovaries? Do they live just on the uterine wall? Like, where do they live?
They develop within the muscle wall of the uterus called the myometrium. And so the uterus is basically a muscle and has on the inside of the cavity a glandular lining. So the majority of the uterus itself is muscle. And so fibroids can develop anywhere where there is that muscle.
Wow. Okay. So, because I was curious, if you're melting them, if they're near another thing that you don't want melted, that would be bad.
But this technology allows us very precise control. The studies I've done indicated that if you're ablating a certain tumor, 1 millimeter away is completely untouched.
Wow. That's incredible. Wow. Mm-hmm. So could that sort of therapy be used for anything else?
It is. It's FDA cleared. It was FDA cleared originally for the treatment of liver cancer, then subsequently bone cancer. It's also been used in the adrenal glands, the kidneys, the breast. It's commonly used by neurosurgeons and cardiac surgeons even.
How did you get involved in this treatment?
Well, it was somewhat fortuitous. A number of circumstances arose that all led to me being able to develop this procedure. One was that I did the genetic amnios for Monterey County for quite a few years, and so I became quite accustomed to needle placement under ultrasound guidance.
Did you do CVS?
No, I didn't do CVS, but just the amnios.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I was on the board of our surgery center when a general surgeon wished to perform liver cancer treatment there. And it had just been FDA cleared. None of the board knew anything about it. And so they asked me to do the research, which I did. And I read everything ever written about radiofrequency ablation of liver cancer. I got the equipment, brought it into my office. The nurses used to complain because I would, on my lunch hour, I would be ablating chicken or pork or roast of any kind, because I had to convince myself that you could control the temperature, that it wouldn't just keep spreading and keep causing damage. Well, it doesn't. You can literally control it to a millimeter, which is so, so great.
Which is unusual, because even in cooking, you think heat radiates, right?
Because that's temperature coming from a flame or something like that. This is temperature arising from energy passing through tissue. If you pass energy through tissue at a certain wavelength, it heats up. If it's a different wavelength, it doesn't. And you'd think that it would cause muscle contractions. Well, at certain wavelengths it does, but at other wavelengths it doesn't. So radio frequency just is kind of a phenomenon whereby you can really control it and you can tailor it to get the result that you want.
Okay, so you're heating up chickens and pork and whatnot, and you obviously convinced yourself that this works. And then what were the next steps to bringing it to fibroids?
Another strange coincidence. Within inside of 1 week, 5 working days, I had 3 patients who had uterine fibroids but didn't want a hysterectomy or a myomectomy. And one of them was a prominent district attorney who said, "Bruce, come on, you're a smart guy. Figure out another way for me to treat my fibroids." I said, "Well, coincidentally, I have been looking at liver cancer. And as I was researching liver cancer, it occurred to me, they're having trouble making this work in some ways. And yet we wouldn't have that trouble if we were treating uterine fibroids. I wonder if this could work for uterine fibroids." Little had I little did I know that others had tried it before me and failed. If I had known that, if it had been published, which it hadn't, then I would have never tried it. So I talked to these three patients.
Wait, that's scary.
Yeah, why is that anywhere to be found?
Wait a minute. Okay, so people tried this and didn't publish any paper saying, hey, guys, doesn't work.
They did not.
Well, maybe it turned out to be a good thing.
Yeah.
But in general, I feel like people publish the paper, so we have some information,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You publish your successes and your failures.
Yes,
because it's
of
about
course.
Information. Anyway.
Because what do we know? Failure is...
We
keep forgetting this darn saying that we love it for some
reason. Failure is feedback.
Failure is feedback.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Losing
it
forward.
Is.
Okay.
It absolutely is. So anyway, the very first patient, believe it or not, was this prominent district attorney.
She let you try it on her?
She
was a guinea pig.
I basically informed her of everything. We had multiple meetings. She said, Bruce, I want you to try this because if it doesn't work, you can still do the hysterectomy. I said, yes. And he says, well, let's give it a try. So I did, and that was the very first patient. And then coincidentally, those two other patients also requested the procedure. So they were my first three patients, and they all did amazingly well. Not only did it shrink the tumors, which was really the goal, just to get rid of the pressure, it stopped the heavy bleeding. It stopped their pain. It stopped the pressure on their bladder as the tumor shrank. And within a few months, they were completely asymptomatic, all from a minimally invasive procedure, outpatient, and back to work in 3 to 4 days.
So it's a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long does it take for it to dissipate and go away?
It depends on the size of the tumors. Smaller and medium tumors usually disappear, and they may take a few months. But the shrinkage, you get most of the shrinkage in terms of volume within the first, say, 4 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the shrinkage continues for years, but it's just slower.
But you've never had to go back in and do it again?
Not on my patients, no.
Did you write a paper?
I wrote a few, yes.
So how did you find out that other people had tried it then? After you wrote your first paper, did people show up and go, hey, I tried that?
I found out through people who provided the ultrasound surface to them. And I found out also from some peers who had heard of other groups trying it. And I looked at how they tried it, and it was obvious why they failed, because they didn't have the right instrumentation.
Ah, so they had the right concept, but they didn't have the right tools.
Correct.
Okay.
So the next, and I was using initially just the off-the-shelf equipment that was designed for the treatment of liver cancer. Mm-hmm. I just figured out how to make it work. Liver is very soft. I figured out how to make it work in a very firm, hard tumor. But I then knew that we would have to redesign all the equipment once the concept was proven so that it could be more user-friendly and easier and safer and faster. And so that's what we did. I created a company in 2005. And now that company has evolved into another company called Acessa Health. And that company now designs and manufactures the equipment, and that is now specifically created and designed for the treatment of uterine fibroids.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, look at that. Before, you'd have to have a hysterectomy, and now you can have an outpatient procedure.
700 patients today, women with symptomatic fibroids, are having a hysterectomy for fibroids. 700 today. And
it's crazy because they don't know. And that was one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the show today, because like I said, you know, you've been doing this for 20 years. My sister almost had to have a hysterectomy, and I had never heard of this procedure until Terry told me about you.
And most people have never heard of it.
Wow. Okay. So tell everyone what to do. So what you go, you have these symptoms or you don't, and you hear that you potentially have fibroids. What's the next step?
The next step is to discuss with your gynecologist what your options are. And you have more options than just a hysterectomy. But usually that is the only option offered to the patient. And there are many other treatments today for fibroids, including this procedure called Acessa that I do. And Acessa is growing leaps and bounds every month. So I have patients who travel from all over the world to come to to Los Angeles and have the procedure because they know that they can have it here.
Right.
And so there's a great need for it worldwide. And that's what I'm doing, is trying to develop centers, and I'm involved in the teaching of this procedure so that more patients can have access to it.
That is amazing. Well, no one's going to forget your name, because who's going to forget Bruce Lee?
It's easy to spell.
Dr. Bruce Lee. Tell people how to find you.
Well, I have two offices, one in Newport Beach and one in Beverly Hills. The easiest way is to go on my website, BruceLeeMD.com, or just Google uterine fibroids, Dr. Bruce Lee, and you'll find it. And in the website, there's a lot of information about fibroids in general, about all the different treatments and what fibroids are. And there are videos included as well. And I recommend that if someone's interested, that they read everything in the website, and then they'll be very well informed about all their options, not just what I do, but all the options and pros and cons. And the goal is to provide patients with information. Once women have the information, they are empowered to make their own choices. They're not just stuck with whatever their doctor recommends, because that doctor may or may not know about other treatment options or may not be able to perform them. So I think that physicians need to educate their patients first and foremost, then help the patient find the option that best matches their goals, their desires, what they want, not what we as physicians want, what the patient wants.
I think that's so smart. And it's so smart to have all the information, because knowledge is obviously power. But, you know, sometimes it's hard for patients to go into a doctor and say, well, what else and what else and what else? Because, you know,
it's intimidating.
It is intimidating. And I have a more unique perspective, I guess, being married to a doctor. So I'm not scared to ask questions. But I think I was before I met him.
Right.
I would probably go in the office and say, okay, and just assume that's, you know, I have a great doctor and this is what they recommend and I'm going to trust that. But you can't. You have to be your own advocate.
You do. And I encourage women to be so, because no one knows you better than you. And again, the goal is to have the right treatment option for you, what matches what your needs are, not just what Dr. A, B, or C can do. And so if we take that approach throughout medicine, whether it's about uterine fibroids or not, I think we become better physicians, and I think our patients benefit with better health care.
Yeah, I know that in the plastic surgery world, you know, what I seem to hear from people is that when people go in to meet with surgeons, they sell you what they do. So if there's five procedures, but they only do three of them, they're going to sell you the three. They're not going to sell you the two that they don't do. So, yeah, right. Be informed, read everything. You can go to BruceLeeMD.com and read all of the options on fibroids. Obviously, maybe one of the biggest things affecting women today. So go read up on it and see what your options are.
Absolutely. I think that there are more options today than ever for women. The problem has been making women aware of them, mm-hmm. making this information available. And that's why I'm so grateful for you all to have me on this podcast, because it will reach a lot of women who may not ever have heard of this, and they then can find out about it, and then they could tell others, and then we are empowering women to make their own choices.
Absolutely. I hope you guys learned a lot from this. I know I have. If you have fibroids or someone you love has fibroids, please go to BruceLeeMD.com. Go see your options. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.